If you are a teacher, parent, administrator, student, and/or anyone who loves reconnecting children with nature, and you want to figure out how to cultivate learning gardens and nature-based curriculum, then this is the podcast, the Outdoor Classrooms Podcast. My name is Victoria Hackett. I am the founder of OutdoorClassrooms.com and the Secret Gardens Nature Classes. I love witnessing the magic that happens when children are playfully learning outdoors. Observing the return of wonder and curiosity when children are interacting with nature is pure magic. This is the podcast that is going to help you capture children's interest and give you not only inspiration, but some real life strategies that are going to help you figure out how to use the outdoor space, your outdoor space, as a teaching tool, so you can enlighten the playful learning experience for young children. Welcome to our Outdoor Classrooms community. Hello. Today we have Martha Burke with us. She is the founding director of the Heartwood Nature School in West Newbury, Massachusetts. Her school operates on an 18-acre Christmas tree farm surrounded by countless acres of fish and game land. She started Heartwood in 2020 with a bell tent in her backyard woods and a pod of six beloved children. Today, she has two yurts and serves roughly 60 children a year with her staff of eight. She loves nothing more than time in the woods with kids. This is an exceptional interview, and I'm so happy to introduce you to Martha Burke. Without further ado, here we go. Hello, everybody. We are here with Martha Burke. Welcome, Martha. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Victoria.
Great. So let's jump right in. Welcome, welcome. So just those that are listening, this is an Outdoor Classrooms tour and talk, which means that those who are in the Circle membership will be able to see these incredibly beautiful pictures of Martha's incredible program. And I'm so excited because this is a program in Massachusetts, so I get to maybe invite myself to visit. And if you are a Circle member, you can see the Outdoor Classrooms tour and talk in the private portal. So welcome again, Martha. Can you just tell us a little bit about yourself and where you're from and give us a little peek of your journey before you founded the Heartwood Nature School?
Sure. Yeah. I hope you're ready for a windy, windy road. I grew up in Texas, super nature kid, exploring the woods behind my grandparents' house and then also our own home. I was outdoors whenever I could be, getting dirty, catching frogs, doing all that fun stuff that childhood should definitely be about. I came up to the Boston area for college and knew that I wanted to be far away from home and exploring a lot of different places. So, you know, it was just about as far as I think my mom would let me go at the time. Once I was here, just really decided this was the place for me. I had a high school teacher tell me at some point that nature and science was really like a man's gig. And I think when I was really young, I listened to that. And then at some point during my college career, I was super interested in science and an outdoor class. And I was lucky enough to study under a professor at school who said, you've got a proclivity for this stuff and you need to be in it. So he really started to help make my love for the outdoors turn into, you know, a real naturalist bend, you know, with a real focus on environmental ed. And I am so grateful for that. I was able to study about hawks in the Boston Common and really learn so much about New England and, you know, the more than human world here on this side of the country. So that was a window sort of that I jumped through as quickly as possible. Though my path took me to a lot of different places after college, I opened an at-home bakery. I was running a nonprofit for a short time. I was working for the Boston Globe for a little bit writing. And then once I had my first kiddo, I stayed home and got to spend a lot of days outside and just really started to understand that that was what was speaking to me more than anything. So I started homeschooling him when he was in first grade. It was really like a light shining right on me that I just knew that education was always something that kind of spoke to me, but it was really lighting a fire. So I started teaching pretty much as soon as I could after that in a preschool. I just fell in love with emergent curriculum and taking the kids outside. And over the years working at this place, our outdoor area began shrinking. And at some point, I realized, sort of right before COVID hit, that there was barely even a tree, like inside our fenced area, that the kids could touch and interact with. And I just started to think, like, kids really just need to be moving outside. You know, like our times when we're outside are so successful and the children are really able to get into such deep play. And that is where I feel, particularly in the early childhood years, where children are able to learn, you know, the most deeply is in that really deep and focused play that they can only really get into when they're given the time and space, particularly outdoors. I think it just becomes really magical. So I had my co-teacher actually at the time say over the course of me that year, you really should just be doing your own program. You really should be doing your own program. And I was kind of like, yeah. You know, I'm not a business person. Like, I don't know how to do this. I know how to teach and I want to be with kids, but this really just isn't my jam. Then COVID hit and was kind of like, you're doing this. So, you know, my own children, my two boys were out of school doing remote learning. And so I really needed to be home to be able to, you know, be with them for that. And then our third kiddo was about two at the time. And so we were home and, you know, obviously I still needed to make money. And like a lot of people during that time, we were just sort of cobbling together whatever you could. And so I was approached by a couple very beloved parents of children who I had taught prior, who had since become very good friends. They were like, you know, we know you've been thinking about this. Would you ever just do, you know, like a pod of kids, you know, for next year? And I was so scared and just thought, like, I don't know if I can do this, right? But I'm willing to try it. So little by little, I started this pod of kids just in my backyard. We've got some woods behind us. And I ordered a bell tent and traded in my tiny car for a minivan and basically became Miss Frizzle for a year. You know, we learned together. And I say we learned together because I was learning such an immense amount from these kids and from this experience being with them. And also just with the parents who were involved in this pod as well. We really just became sort of a beacon of hope and love and light in a time that was really hard. And if you talk to them today, they'll still say that was one of the best years they've ever had.
Yeah.
Because we were just together in this little village. So that's how Heartwood started. And little by little, I was just taking baby steps over the course of that year to, you know, research licensing and figure out land to be on, like little tiny baby steps. You know, I really felt like a toddler just learning how to walk, trying to figure this out. And it still feels like a miracle that I did, you know, because in the time that was, and also just this idea of like fully outdoor education in the state of Massachusetts, I think still now is, you know, a little squirrely, you know, to try to figure it out with licensing for the EEC. But we really did it. And so
it says on your website, you're the first program in the nation. Is that true?
We're not the first to be licensed by the EEC. I think that right now we're the only school operating outside of Yurts on the North Shore. And I know that there are two other schools in the state operating outside of Yurts, but we are, as it says, fully licensed by the EEC. And since we've become licensed, I've been contacted by so many women in particular who are working to license their own programs and get outside. And I feel very strongly, you know, about helping people get into this point because I was certainly helped by the other programs who were just beginning at that time too. So it feels like a beautiful way of helping each other in this community and really getting more kids outside to learn.
Yeah. So I'd love to learn more about that process of licensing. And I'd also love to just learn more about what does nature-based education mean to you? So it's, which you've already sort of talked about as well. So
sure. So, I mean, as far as what nature-based education means to me, I am adamant that we have become completely separated from nature as a species. And it's very unfortunate because I feel like I know that the effects of our separation from nature have had wide-ranging negative effects on both our species and, you know, the more than human world that we live in and amongst. And I really feel that beginning to, you know, reattach our bond to the natural world is something that is going to heal not only the people who are directly involved in that, but will begin to heal our world as a whole. And I don't say that lightly at all. I really fully believe that fact. I have seen children and adults be involved in this work who are lost in a way. And I think I was lost in a way before starting this work. And through the connection and time and focus and energy, really spending our days outdoors and getting to know the forest and the woodlands around us has become something that has really changed my life. And I've definitely seen some really beautiful things happen as a result for a lot of people, children and families included. And so this work, you know, on its face can sound like, oh, you're playing with kids outdoors and that's so cool. You know, it's so nice to be outside all the time and the kids must be able to run around and be free. And my answer is yes, of course it is. But the real meaning behind it is so much more deeply rooted and feels, you know, when I lose sight sometimes because this work of running a school and being a parent and, you know, just being a human in 2025 can be so difficult and complicated and stressful. But whenever things get hard, I really try to remember how much children are healing and how hard, you know, our public education school system is right now for children being, you know, forced to sort of sit in a desk and learn in this really didactic way. And I see the children really, like I said, getting into deep play and asking questions and being able to satisfy their curiosities and ask questions that they don't find the answers to immediately, right? And are, you know, really able to just explore the woods and get to know them so well and learn about what's around us. You know, it really helps me on those days when things feel just really hard.
So well said. So well said. So we are looking at two incredible pictures. And as I was going through your pictures, I was like, oh my goodness, this is such a beautiful campus or site or forest school. So can you tell us a little bit about these spaces that we're looking at?
Sure. So
the learning spaces that you have in your program.
Yeah. So we are on a Christmas tree farm in West Newbury, Massachusetts. And the farm was just purchased a little over a year ago by Derek and Lydia, our farmer friends. And they are, I think, also somewhere in these pictures as well. But their sort of philosophy around purchasing this Christmas tree farm is really working to heal the land. And so it feels like such a synergistic thing for us to be there as well, because the village that we are creating, the community that we're creating around this piece of land just feels incredibly special. So the picture on the right is our yurt yard space. We have two yurts that are connected to electricity. And we have something that feels incredibly luxurious, which is two Mitsubishi mini split units that provide both air conditioner and heating. And, you know, when we first opened Heartwood at our previous location, the town wouldn't allow us to have wood stoves in our yurts, which are allowed at the two other yurts in the state at the time. And so we're really trying to just figure out, you know, how to heat these spaces, because though we are a program that's 99% outside, when it is 20 degrees and windy and raining or snowing or whatever, you know, having three-year-olds eat outside in that kind of weather can be really challenging and not very comfortable. And, you know, I think part of our program philosophy is really allowing children to feel discomfort and figure out how to work through it and move past it. But at that point, I mean, nobody wants to be eating outside for snack and lunch in that kind of weather. So having some heated spaces is really important to us. So we have that luxury of those heat and AC units, and I'm really loving them. So that yurt yard space is where we begin and end each day. And our younger friends spend a good amount of time there, especially at the beginning of the school year, just getting used to the routines and expectations. But our older groups spend a very small amount of time there because we are out exploring the farmland that has several different types of animals living on them. And we're able to sort of see the circle of life that's happening as those animals are taken for harvest. We've just said goodbye to the pigs and two sheep that have been on the farm as well. And it's a really special thing to sort of see these animals in a really happy place out on pasture and being loved and respected as much as they are. The picture on the left was a woodshed that we have. We brought it from our previous location because we wanted to use it as storage. And what we discovered is that the children, upon finding this place, then immediately declared it an ice cream shop and were decorating it with chalk. And you can see some beautiful phonetic writing on there as well. They were telling me how to spell ice cream shop. And, you know, obviously this beautiful math work was taking place with selling the ice cream and how many wood chips, you know, for each ice cream. I think it was like 8 wood chips, which seems very expensive. Or an ice cream cone. But basically, at some point, Farmer Derek was like, well, I guess I'm not storing tools in there anymore. And I said, you're definitely not. This is a new spot, a new space that the children have definitely claimed. So yeah, it's a fun spot. So we typically do circle and snack in our yurt yard, as you can see that's happening on the right. And then we head out for adventure out of the yurt yard for most of the day.
Incredible. Incredible. It's beautiful. The younger children are wearing these vests.
Yep. So we are surrounded by a large amount of fish and game land. And so we're very, I mean, basically the vests are for visibility for our own sort of, you know, children counting during the school day to be able to see them well. But we do have hunters who are active nearby and we are in open conversation with them. So they know when the children are there during the school day, and much of the hunting happens, you know, before school hours or after school hours. But still just very important to us to, you know, make sure the children are really visible to everybody.
Yeah, brilliant, brilliant. And it's just this indoor, even your indoor yurt space is, it looks so cozy.
It is. It's a yurt is such a beautiful building. I was very intentional about wanting a yurt. You know, people kept saying like, why don't you just build a building? And first of all, building a building these days is so expensive and a yurt was much more attainable. But, you know, the fact that this is a round building is something that I chose very intentionally. A circle is a shape such that, you know, there are no corners, which makes things a little complicated as well. But, you know, a circle is a never-ending shape. But it also has an implication of, you know, when you're sitting with children in a circle, you can see all of them and they can see all of everyone else. So everybody is fully vested and included, you know, as opposed to a rectangle or a square, you know, can sometimes have corners that get lost and children whose faces you can't see. And the equality and sort of, you know, beauty that comes in that circle shape is really, really important to me. So it's a very intentional choice for sure.
Beautiful. And just some more beautiful, beautiful pictures. And you speak a lot of what you've already talked about, which is really building a relationship, children building all of us really, building that relationship with nature and how vital that is. And again, you've done this in so many different ways. And here you are, you just have all these kids in the woods and circle time and talking. And do you want to share a little bit about what's going on in these pictures?
Sure. So these two in front of us are taken in a wood spot that has yet to be named. We have purposely not named any of these spaces in the woods yet. The children are going to name them themselves. And this wood spot, both of these pictures are from the same area that currently has a couple names out there that the children are trying out and will be voting on them at some point soon. you know, in our old location, we had barred owl woods as a spot because literally during one of our lunches, a barred owl swooped down and sat on a branch, you know, not 20 feet above us as we had lunch that day. And so I feel like we are definitely blessed and seen by the creatures in the forest around us. And we see these creatures as, you know, beings who are there to sort of teach us and show us the way in a lot of ways. And so, you know, in this left picture, I'm not sure if you can see the little tree frog down below.
Right here.
Yeah. So the children are really watching. And, you know, part of our philosophy and what we feel is so important to teach children is, you know, we all have this sort of like anthropomorphic idea that humans are above nature, right? That one, we're separate, and that two, we are in charge of nature. And so, you know, in a lot of spaces, you might see children like, you know, being able to just pick up frogs or, you know, touch creatures or interact with trees in a way that, you know, there's relationship there, but it's very much that humans are sort of, you know, at the apex of this sort of pyramid. And we really see ourselves as equals to the beings in the forest, you know, the trees, the ferns, the plants, even the poison ivy and the bittersweet, you know, have places and roles that we are working to understand and to really teach to the children. So, you know, if we do get lucky enough one day to spot a tree frog, we're really working to teach the children some self-regulation, you know, that like it's not particularly appropriate for us to go pick up the frog because then we're interrupting this frog's day, right? And how much more are we going to learn about this creature if we just watch and we're very quiet? And also the teaching around that regulation is so important for children in general, especially young ones. You know, if we're eventually asking them to sit at circle quietly while a teacher is speaking or to sit in the forest at a sit spot and really notice what's around them, that kind of teaching happens in so many other moments rather than just that circle time or, you know, that sit spot time.
It's incredible. So do you follow what, I mean, it's very emergent what your work is. Is there any curriculum that you're following? On your website, you talk a lot about community. So that seems like there's a big piece in that, in the puzzle. Can you share a little bit about that?
Sure. So our curriculum is all emergent, with the exception of our kindergarten students, who many of whom will be heading to first grade in the public school system next year. And so we're very cognizant of the fact that particularly in our area, children are being asked to be very fluent readers at the end of kindergarten. And so we are working really hard to strike a balance between what we know is really right for children and appropriate for them, but also making sure that, you know, if they're heading to public school in the first grade next year, that they are, you know, prepared for what's there for them. And so our kindergarten children will spend a lot more time with some focused learning time, particularly around reading and math. Our science curriculum really takes care of itself. They learn everything that they need on a daily basis without me really having to, you know, stand in front of them and teach them anything. I will say that though our children are reading at the end of a kindergarten year, we work really hard to strike that balance between still making that learning feel meaningful and relevant to them and as emergent as possible. So, you know, our group right now is super interested in Oriental bittersweet and how much of it is so much on the farm, and a couple other invasive plants as well. And so we're doing some work to remove that in many of our wood spaces, and it's creating a lot of opportunity for heavy work for them, which is so necessary. But also we're incorporating a lot of literacy curriculum into that. And then as far as how we share with parents, we do a lot of newsletters. We use the ProCare app, and so we're uploading a lot of photos and explaining what's happening on the farm with the children to the parents. But you did really hit the nail on the head, which is that community is incredibly vital to Heartwood, and it's a big part of, you know, why I started Heartwood in the first place, because I do feel like in this day and age, community is really what's missing in a lot of places. In years prior, you know, people were very active at church, or people were very active in their neighborhoods and communities. And I feel like particularly after COVID, you know, we have isolated ourselves a lot more. And so Heartwood is a school, but it is also a community of people with some shared values and some very beautiful spirits. I mean, we are a community of kindness and of giving, and you know, we work really hard to not only create this beautiful, safe place for a lot of families and make sure we're feeling as inclusive as possible for a lot of folks who might be, who might not feel as included or safe in other spaces, but we're working really hard to be sure we are giving back through local food pantries, particularly this year, but also making sure we are sort of honoring the Indigenous folks in this area who are currently living and those who have, you know, really stewarded this land for so many years prior to white colonial settlers being here, particularly around this time of year, you know, celebrating Indigenous Peoples Day and talking about Thanksgiving in a more honest way has been a really important facet to what we do. And so the community itself is giving a lot of funding to the Massachusetts Center for Native American Awareness and particularly involving ourselves in the Indigenous Peoples Day celebration in Newburyport, just to make sure that we are continuing to spread some knowledge about the people who are here and who really have been taking care of this land for so many years, but also just being sure that we're continuing to spread kindness and love, you know, throughout our entire community.
Incredible. Incredible. I love it. So I absolutely love this picture. I think there's just so much going. A picture says 1,000 words.
Yeah.
Hugs. I love relax the kids look. I love the laughter, the joy. Are there any, can you share any memorable experiences? I mean, I know you probably have a million, or success stories from your students learning?
Yeah. It's so funny. Because we're doing emergent curriculum, you know, I would say like here in our fifth year, you know, I entered school in Heartwood thinking to myself that I knew a lot about the natural world and a lot about, you know, the creatures who live nearby, who share the woods with us. And each year I find that I learn more and more based on what the students are interested in. And so one of my very favorite years was the year before last. And our kindergarten group was lucky enough one day to be at a spot that we called Beaver Bend because there was a huge beaver lodge in the middle of this area of water. And in the fall, we like headed down to this spot where a few days prior, you know, this huge birch tree was standing. And we got there like after a weekend and the birch tree had fallen. The beavers had been super busy taking this tree down over the weekend. And so this happened in the fall and we began a study of beavers then. And typically, I would say that, you know, an emergent curriculum theme sort of runs its course between 6 and 8 weeks, just naturally. The children are sort of like super curious and hyper-focused, and we sort of learn as much as we can during that time frame. And then at some point, it sort of just peters out and they have a new focus that we then turn to. But these kids that year did not let beavers go. And so... We, you know, obviously, you know, you have a plan as a teacher and, you know, with emergent curriculum, the plan is really based on what they want. But, you know, I really thought we were done and the children were telling me that they weren't. So we continued to study beavers as a pretty steady thread with some other things poking out here and there throughout the course of the year, but for pretty much the entire school year. And so the joy that that brought to me and to the children was so immense, but also it was just such an incredible experience to be able to spend a year sort of with our naturalist hats on, you know, really watching these creatures throughout the course of the seasons of the school year, being able to incorporate some really beautiful storytelling and some imaginative play from the children was just so super special. We set up the trail camera and, you know, got to witness like three baby beavers interacting with a great blue heron, and just sort of like the dinosaur squawk of a great blue heron, if you haven't heard it, is pretty incredible. But to see the interaction between these two species of creatures, you know, on trail camera and just watching the excitement from the children and everything that we learned during the course of that year will stick with me forever. It's one of my favorite, very favorite years for sure. Wow. Amazing. And I have millions of stories like that I could go on.
I know, I'm sure you do.
Yeah.
So just, you know, I'm sure we're speaking to the choir. Anyone that's listening to this podcast sort of knows what the, you know, how to address potential challenges like the weather conditions or safety concerns and whatnot. Do you have maybe one or two tips that you can share that we might not be thinking about?
I mean, I think the very basic sort of like three-layer weathering system for gear is so important, you know, of base layer and fleece layer and then outer layer. I don't know that I have, it's so funny. I think if you were with me in the program, you'd be like, huh, what is this going on? How is this happening? You know, and noticing all of these things, because after 5 years, all of this stuff seems so basic to me. But I do think that the very major part about gear and how it can make you safe is such an important thing to be able, it's so important that the children are geared properly. And for that to happen, parent education is really the biggest piece. So on our website, we have an entire resources page of gear that we have tried and tested and are recommending to parents each year. But also, you know, we are sending out messages each morning as the weather changes, especially, and then really talking to the children about their gear. But I think the really important part of outdoor schooling, and I think is something that gets kind of pushed to the wayside a lot, and I really feel like it needs to be brought back to the center, is how much parents work to make sure that children are successful and geared up appropriately at school. And that is not only with gear, but it's also with the food that they're sending and how much time and effort they're putting into getting the children ready for school each day, and how challenging that is for many children to be able to, you know, it's a sensory thing. I find it myself to put on all of these layers for school each day. And, you know, if you're adding in like a really cold wind that day, there is so much work that parents are putting in to getting their children geared up for school each day. And just acknowledging that and also expressing endless gratitude to them for it, because the work that they're doing before school, the night before, you know, I'm picturing moms and dads like making sure the backpack has everything in it and making sure there's extra changes of clothes and all those sorts of things. It is so important to express gratitude to your parents and that community as a whole for what they do each day to be sure that their children are at school successfully. You know, a normal kid going to school has a sweatshirt and, you know, a lunchbox and a water bottle, and the work that it takes for parents and families to get their children ready for forest school is vastly different. And I think just making sure that they know that is so important, because it really is, it's a make or break thing, right? About your day and the child's day. So, you know, a child who's really geared up successfully is going to have a beautiful day, and one that's not, it's going to be a little bit harder.
Yeah, that's brilliant. Thank you for sharing that. That is
such a
good tip. I think we talked about, you know, how you deal with those questions. If they play all day, how will they learn? But what excites you the most about your mission at Heartwood Nature School? I mean, that's a big one.
That's such a big question. So, I mean, I think I've touched on a couple of these points already, and I think it's a multi-pronged thing. I don't think I can say one thing. I think the fact that we are building community together and that this community is one that I feel will be changed by their experience with Heartwood, both the parents and the children, and the idea that through that change, you know, those humans can go out into the world with a different philosophy about life and nature and how we interact with it is really key. I do think helping people to understand how important play and slowing down are important to our lives. And it's play for children because it is how they learn. And I'm so grateful for so many people who are working to constantly hype up the idea of play and how important it is for children, because I feel like it is integrating into our educational system in a way that I hope is going to make some big change eventually. But how important play is both for grownups and for kids, and slowing down in our daily lives, and, you know, really getting back to the, you know, sort of Mary Oliver mantra of noticing and being astonished and telling people about it. If I can integrate that idea into the minds of children and their parents as a result, I think that would be a beautiful thing in general.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I could go on, Victoria, but that's,
I know,
that's it's a little snippet.
So beautiful. And we've talked about community. We've talked about your spaces. It's just absolutely incredible. And there are your two yurts side by side. Mm-hmm. I have to invite myself to come visit because you are.
You've already have. You're welcome anytime. Just put on those proper layers and you're there.
Right, that's right. So if you were to give one seed of inspiration or a tip to either an educator or a parent, what would that be? And I'm sure you do this every day, but what would to our listeners today, what would be a seed of inspiration you'd like to leave them with?
Yeah, I think, you know, part of this journey has really been sort of being smacked in the face with adversity everywhere I turn. I don't think at any other point in my life working on something so beautiful have I been faced with so many obstacles. And I think it's become sort of like a philosophy of my life now that I know that when I am doing something hard and doing something worthwhile, that it's going to be harder. And so I would just encourage people, if you are constantly being faced with adversity and obstacles, it's almost a sign that you're doing something right. And it's, you know, something that usually will turn people off and cause them to get discouraged and quit. And if I had a dollar for every time I said, I'm going to go get a job at McDonald's instead of doing this, I would be really, really rich. And, you know, I'm very lucky to have a husband who's like, honey, that just means you're doing the right thing, you know, and that's what we've really learned in this experience. So I would just encourage people to, you know, find the thing that you feel really passionate about and just keep going with it, no matter what gets thrown in your face, because as hard as this work is, it is so unbelievably worth it. And I will keep doing this till the day I die if this is the outcome that I get. You know, it's such a beautiful place and a beautiful community filled with so many wonderful people, you know, who are here to support each other. So that would be it.
Yeah. I love how you have spoken about community plus just creating a village. I just love how that sounds and feels, and it just is incredible. So I thank you for that beautiful work. So where can we find you?
Well, I'm at Heartwood most days. So we are in the town of West Newbury in Massachusetts. We have a website that we're currently updating to include our new space, but then also we're pretty active on Instagram, though I've really been trying to scale back because I don't need to spend that much time on social media, but we've just been so busy lately that it's been hard to put so much effort into it. But we are pretty active on Instagram, so that's a good place to go. I've worked hard to create content that is both validating for people who are really working in this industry right now and particularly in the field of outdoor education, but just a lot of sort of tips for parents as well who are trying to find calm with their kids in this time where it seems anything but calm.
Yes. I can't thank you enough, Martha, for joining us and sharing all your incredible stories and your space, the beautiful pictures. Any last words that you'd like to share before we sign off?
Oh, I would just say, keep going. Whenever life is hard, just get out for a walk in the woods and everything will be okay.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Thank you for tuning in to today's episode. If you're ready to take the next step and dive deeper into our community, here's how you can get involved. First, you can join our one-hour workshops. These happen every month with fresh and exciting new topics each time. It's a great way to get a taste for what we offer. If you enjoy the workshops, you can become part of our Circle membership community. And this will give you access to not only all the new workshops that happen every month, but it will also give you access to our entire workshop library, which is growing. It will also give you access to our monthly roundtable discussions. And also, as a member, you receive exclusive discounts on all our programs. It's wonderful, wonderful family. The final step, if you would like to dig deeper into our community, is to join our Outdoor Classrooms Teacher Certification Program. This program is for those educators who are eager to dig even deeper into our programming, and it's the perfect next step. If you want to learn more about each of these programs, or you're not sure where you need to start, or any questions that you might have, schedule a one-on-one discovery call with me, Victoria Hackett. I will put all of that information in the show notes. You can also go to our website at www.outdoor-classrooms.com to learn more information. We can't wait to welcome you into our community. Until next time.